Wherefore he said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. The beginning of his kingdom, now we see what he was hunting, men to serve in his army and in his religion. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Achan and Calneh in the land of Shinar. All right, now get that in mind. Did you see that new word in the Bible, Shinar? Nearly everybody is tied up in an agrarian society. Most of the people mentioned in Genesis chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 are shepherds or farmers. It is a farming agrarian society for the most part. And Genesis 4 alludes to some cities being built. But it wasn't a swinging city like New York or Houston yet, you see. I mean, it takes time to build, you know, a population up to get a big city. There were some city slickers, city folk. But the majority of the people were living in an agrarian community. In other words, it was basically family. My children just moved right across the road. And they had children and they moved, you know, we're just multiplying around each other. Now, think what an incredible, devastating influence and change it would be on that kind of small community society to suddenly thrust on it a kingdom. One man raises himself up, draws other families unto himself with his charisma, with his leadership, with his religious beliefs, and draws the men from these families into an army. Now, nobody else has an army. He's the only jolly army going. And you see that all of a sudden, one man can begin to dictate what will and will not happen because he's got stroke. And all you've got are you and your 10 sons and your grandkids are too young, and there's 4,000 of us and there's 12 or 13 or 14 of you. So Nimrod stands out in these verses. Here's a kingdom. Think what that would do to a family-oriented society. All right, you got it. Now, it tells us about the beginning of his kingdom. And then God just leaves Nimrod hanging, the rebel, the spotted one, hanging. Goes on and finishes a whole bunch of genealogies and comes to chapter 11, verse 1. Would you read it? Now, the whole earth was of one language. See, now God's gone back to Genesis 10, 5. He said he divided the earth up by their tongues after the flood. And we're sitting there with a big question mark. How did God do that? And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. Ooh, we've seen that word before. It says, they said to one another, come, let us make brick, burn them thoroughly. And they laid brick for stone. Everything's a fake. Why didn't they just use stone? Everything's a counterfeit. They made brick for stone. Had a better idea. And slime for mortar. Why didn't they just make some mortar? And they said, come, let us build a city and a tower whose top may reach into heaven, and let us make us a name, pride, lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the earth. See, Nimrod is hunting. He's a mighty hunter. He's hunting people of one mind with him that wants to stay and make a name. Now, back in Genesis chapter 9, verse 1, right after the flood, when they came off the ark, God told them in chapter 9, verse 1, to spread themselves, be fruitful, multiply, and spread all over the world. That was God's command. These people rebelled under Nimrod the rebel. They said, no, we're not going to spread and do what God said. We're going to stop in one place, found a kingdom, and we're going to build this tower that will reach into heaven, and make ourselves a big name, a reputation, lest we be scattered. In other words, lest what God wants to happen happens. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the children of men built. Now, let me make sure you understand something. These people aren't stupid. They don't think they're going to build a tower so tall that they can look into God's bedroom. What does it mean here they're going to build this tower of Babel to look into heaven? All right? We don't have to guess. The Bible tells us. But the trouble is, we don't read the Bible. All of chapter 47 of Isaiah is about Babylon, which is located on the plains of Shinar. Babel, Babylon. All right, it's just, it became the area called where the Tower of Babel was, became the country, you know, the area around it, of Babylon, which is still located on the plains of Shinar. Chapter 47 of Isaiah, verse 1, come down and sit in the dust, O virgin daughter of Babylon, sit on the ground. There is no throne, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no more be called tender and delicate. Now, I just want you to see that God's talking to Babylon. If you read all the way down, he's telling them, you think you're big stuff, but I'm about to bring judgment on you. Okay? And notice in verse 5, he says, sit and be silent. Get thee into darkness, O daughter of the Chaldeans, for you shall no more be called the Lady of Kingdoms. Now, Nimrod, I'm just going to tell you this, and then we'll read down here. Nimrod, according to secular history, married a woman. Now, we don't know her name in the Bible. The Bible doesn't tell you her name, but the Bible tells us her title. Nimrod, we know now, we're getting some information together. We know Nimrod formed the first kingdom. We know where it was, on the plains of Shinar, and we know that he's the one then, I'm trying to show you, he is the man that's leading the building of the Tower of Babel. Chapter 10 just goes right into chapter 11, where God now picks up and explains to us what they were doing. Now, as I said, the Bible does not tell us his wife's name, but it does tell us his wife's title. Her title is given in the book of Jeremiah many times. Her title was the Queen of Heaven, which you Catholics can immediately recognize is what you gave the title to Mary, but you see, you got it from the cult. The cult poisoned your church years ago, nearly 2,000 years ago. Y'all were poisoned and didn't even know it. Now, her name, according to secular history, was Semiramis. And this was her title. All right, now, let's see what they were doing. So, it says she was the Lady of Kingdoms. It's talking about not only Babylon, but the founder and his wife. The Lady. And you Catholics in here, you notice you refer to her as Our Lady. That was another one of Semiramis' titles. All the titles that went to this woman, your church has now put on Mary. Okay? Now notice with me down here very quickly at verse 12. God, all through here, you can read it for yourself, is talking about the things that Babylon was doing, what they were doing. And notice it says, stand now with your enchantments and with the multitude of your sorceries in which you have labored from your beginning or from your youth, from your inception. Aha! We now know that God says they were practicing sorcery from the very beginning of the kingdom of Babylon. Verse 13. You are wearied in the multitude of your counsels. Let now the astrologers, the stargazers, the monthly prognosticators, stand up and save you from the things that are going to come upon you. So we see other things that they were doing. Astrologers, stargazing, monthly prognostication. Now we know what they built that tower for. To study the zodiac so that they could peer into the heavens studying the stars. They wanted to get up high to study the signs of the zodiac. The constellation that dominates the winter sky is called Orion. And Orion is just another word in a different language for Nimrod. It is Nimrod, the name Nimrod, in another language. In verse 9 says, speaking of the beginnings again, said that there was a multitude of sorceries and great abundance of enchantments. Okay, now come back to Genesis chapter 11. So now we see what was going on there. Verse 6, the Lord said, behold, the people are one. They have all one, and that's their religion. We're one, and we're one with the force. Okay? We're one, the people are one, they have all one language, and this they begin to do. Now, nothing will be withheld from them which they have imagined to do. Now, by that, God doesn't mean that they're going to become gods and do anything they want. He means anything that the lost, fallen imagination can dream up to do. I know what let's do. Let's just take someone that's awake and alive and tie them to an operating table and let's just cut on them and see what happens. Hitler did that one. See, anything they imagine to do, they're going to do. I know what let's do. Let's all of us take off our clothes and have an orgy. And let's throw some animals in with it to keep it really spiced up. The Bible talks about bestiality and that the Canaanites that God destroyed were practicing bestiality and they had even their little children involved in it. That's one reason why God told Joshua to kill them all. Listen to me. Do you want to adopt some 8-year-old that's been practicing sex with adults and animals for 5 years, and you want to adopt him and bring him in? Do you want to know what he's going to teach your little kids in about 4 days? I'm going to tell you, that's something really hard to get. Don't worry about the little kids. When they died, they were protected by covenant. Many of those little kids, see, weren't responsible. They went to heaven. But not the parents. And it's again, it's in chapter 8, verse 21. Speaking of Noah offering up animals right after the flood, it says in verse 21, the Lord smelled a sweet savor, and the Lord said in his heart, I will not again curse the ground any more for man's sake. For the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Alright, now God is worried that with one language, all these evil imaginations are just going to get worse and worse and worse, and we're going to pull it off. We're going to all act together. Now, turn back another time to see the same thought in chapter 6, verse 5. Chapter 6, verse 5 of Genesis. God saw the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. This is after the fall. So God, having said that man only thinks wickedness, if I leave them with one language, I leave them in this place, all that they're thinking about, wickedness, they're going to pull off. And I'm going to save them from themselves. I'm going to confound their language. Because they're in witchcraft, they're in sorcery, idolatry, they're all going to get demon-possessed. And I'm going to save them from it by confounding their language. At least give them a chance. Now, doesn't that hurt? Did any of you really see what God said? That the imagination... See, listen, the cult teaches this. Deep down, y'all, all of deep down inside, there's something basically good in all people. God says, no, deep down inside, there's something wicked as hell in all people. And therefore, having that deep down inside, they're going to use it to do wickedness or to think wickedness and plot wickedness. So, that really hurts. See, the cult hates these verses right here. It teaches the exact opposite of the cult. Every time you hear someone say, and they may not even be part of the cult, someone in the cult said it to them, and it sounded good. Deep down, I just know there's something good in him, deep down. His mother probably told him that one. And she didn't even know about the cult. Because, you know why? We want it. We want to walk the fence. I want my dirty, impure thoughts so that I can sleep with my wife and pretend she's my secretary to kind of jazz things up a little bit. I want to be saved. I want to be saved, but I want all the pleasures of sin. Now you recall that Moses had to make a choice. In the book of Acts, in chapter 7, tells us that Moses made that choice. That rather than enjoy the pleasures of Egypt for a season, listen, he's a prince. He can sleep with anything in that country. I don't care if she's married to you. We just kill you and take her for the prince. You understand? He's got the whole jolly army with him. But Moses chose the things of God rather than temporary pleasures. Come, let us go down. Confound their language. That's the word Babel. That they may not understand one another's speech. Kind of hard. Hey, do you understand? See, I'm trying to proselyte you into the cult and get you over here on old Nimrod's side. He's a mighty hunter of men's souls. Before the Lord. Nimrod is before the Lord, Jehovah. Now, it's going to be awfully hard for me to proselyte you and convert you to the religion of Nimrod on the plains of Shinar if I can't understand your language. I've lost my big missionary pitch. We don't speak the same as God confounded their languages. Now, Nimrod died. Now, let me tell you about the cult. The secular writings of the cult say that when Nimrod died, Semiramis was afraid she would lose her position. See, he was king. And she was afraid that she wouldn't be able to control the people and rule. She wanted to rule. Now, Nimrod, as you should have gathered from our study, he was a black. And we have found in archaeology ancient statues of Nimrod. He's got leopard skin on. He's very African. Very flattened nose, large, you know, the larger nostrils that some of the Africans have. He was very African. Kinky hair. She was a white woman. Now, the Bible doesn't teach against that. That's probably going to make a bunch of you angry, but I just thought I'd tell you that. The Bible doesn't teach against that. That's what your mother taught against and your denomination taught against. All to the glory of God, of course. That's because they won't fess up and face up to the fact that within Adam and Eve was the DNA. And all the Adam and Eve's kids, Genesis chapter 5, verse 4 says they had many children. Honey, they had rain. They was like a rainbow over their house. But once the flood was over and God confounded their languages, Semiramis then invented the story that Nimrod, listen to this, because here's where all of Baal worship begins. It was there at the tower. That Nimrod, as spirit, had become one with the sun. How about that? And that the sun was now, Nimrod had become deified. In his lifetime, he was deified by the people. They worshipped him as a god and her as a goddess. Now that shouldn't shock you. Here in our lifetime, the same thing has happened in Japan. The emperor was worshipped as god. Listen, the Romans were just as intelligent as you. Your IQ is no higher than theirs, and they worshipped the Caesars as gods. Now, so what I'm saying is, intelligent, well-educated people will worship a man as god. The whole world's about to do it very soon. His name is the Antichrist. We don't know his other name yet. Well, I know one of them, the Beast. But I don't know his name yet. I don't plan to ever know it. I plan to be gone before I know it. Okay? But she said Nimrod had been incarnated in the sun, become one with the sun. Now, she had a problem. She got pregnant, unmarried. They had one big trouble in their religion with Nimrod trying to get him deified. The baby came out white because she had a baby by a white man. And they named him Tammuz. And you can find his name in the book of Ezekiel in chapter 8. Tammuz. His mother was the queen of heaven. His dad was Nimrod. Well, not really. But that's what they claimed. And she claimed, can you believe it? It was an immaculate conception. She had had intercourse with old Nimrod, who came to her in the night as a spirit. Why not? Half of you in here believe that kind of garbage. You say, not me, Brother Floyd. I'm uptown. I'm a good Christian. I read the Bible. You do believe it. Half of you in here at least believe that in Genesis chapter 6, that fallen angels had sexual intercourse with women and produced giants. And that is a myth. That's mythology. It is not truth. Because the Bible teaches angels are sexless beings. Jesus said, in heaven, you'll be like the angels. You don't get given in marriage. There's not one case in the Bible of any angels being born. Angels are all created beings. They do not generate other angels. That is not truth. It is not true interpretation of Scripture. It is Greek and Roman mythology. It is cultic mythology that has invaded the church. And we believe it and teach it in Sunday school. We've been poisoned by the cult. They have foisted their doctrines on us, and we think it's Christian. In other words, the boy was Nimrod reincarnated. Even though Nimrod was one with the sun, Nimrod also had come back now and was this boy reincarnated. Well, now the bad part about that, if that's true, see, if this is her husband come back, guess what she had to do with that boy when he got a little older? Marry him. It's old Nimrod. See, she didn't think about that. She had to marry the boy because he's her husband reincarnated. You got it? You got it. So now we have incest. And the story gets worse. All the stories you have ever read in Greek and Roman mythology and all the other mythologies around the whole world are stories about those two people from their real life that over the years got it built up, expanded upon, and in other words, Nimrod was a great swimmer. So all the stories about Neptune are just stories that started off about him that were true, that got... he could run fast, Mercury, Hermes. He could... See, because he's got to, y'all. He's God. I mean, nobody can outrun God, right? If this guy's God, we're going to worship him. Who can outrun God? You better not outrun him. You won't outrun him but once. Now, and about her. He was a mighty hunter, the stories of Apollo. Okay, and as time went on, the myths and legends changed where you began to lose touch with the original base of the thing, where it became more than one god. Then it became many gods when they originally were all stories about the same people, and they just got bigger and bigger and bigger. The first little Antichrist that tried to rule the world, and God stopped him with languages. Okay, now, I'll just throw this out for you. When Jan Hughes got grown, he went out on a boar hunt, and a boar gored him. And he was left by the people thinking he was dead. And of course, you know, the cult doesn't bury you in the ground. They leave you up on the poles. Well, he came too. Back at the ranch, everybody was mourning for their god that had died. But don't worry, he's coming back through reincarnation, they think. And sure enough, 40 days later, he shows up back in town, alive. Praise God, it's a miracle. He's been raised from the dead. The resurrection. Now, being Tammuz, you understand that the symbol of Tammuz that he adopted was this. The capital T, the Tau. The counterfeit Messiah. So, they began to observe Lent for 40 days. Lent, y'all, Lent has nothing to do with the Bible. You don't find that when Moses went up for 40 days or when Jesus fasted 40 days, this isn't the kind of thing that they were doing. Lent has always been part of the cult, where they gave up things for old Tammuz that had come back from the dead. Oh, they had all kinds of things to celebrate his resurrection. They colored eggs as symbols of new life. I mean, here's an egg, and all of a sudden, there comes a life out of it. And so that became one of his symbols. Haven't you ever wondered what Easter eggs have to do with Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus? They don't have anything to do with it. It's the feast of Ishtar. Ishtar. That's another name for the... See? Ishtar is Semiramis' name in Babylonian. See, they said, well, he can't die. He'll live forever. And so they got his symbol that they put on his flag. It was an evergreen tree. In a few moments, it'll finally hit you. Have you ever wondered what a Christmas tree's got to do with Jesus' birth? Did you ever read? Have you read the Bible yet? Have you ever read anything about a Christmas tree being there at Bethlehem? Now, I'm not telling you can't have a Christmas tree. I'm just telling you it hadn't got anything to do with Jesus. The cult got you. And made you feel so good about it. And in fact, you can read about it in Jeremiah. They tell you in Jeremiah how they did it. So they go out and find a good evergreen tree. I think it's chapter 10. It says, they cut that rascal down. And then they take some wood and nails and nail it down where it'll stand up. And it says, then they put bright gold and silver on it to make it shine and look pretty. Now, what those represented in the cult were the spirit beings. See, there's the tree. See, the evergreen, it's nothing but a pyramid. It's the pyramid. And all the little lights on it, this is you working your way up through all the little demon angels and everything to get to the top. But see, listen to me. See, you just got born one day and you didn't know what was going on, and Mama did it and Daddy did it, so you did it. Because, I mean, everybody knows Mom and Dad's good old boy and girl. And well, that's what happened to Mom and Dad. They didn't know any better either. See, nobody knows what's going on except the boys at the top of the cult. Just a little inner esoteric circle. And so you turn on your lights gorgeously and beautifully and everything. And so we're worshiping exactly. And so then after it dries, see, they leave it like that for a while. And then after a while, when it all dries out and the leaves die off, everything, then they trim it down and make a good idol out of it. So you guys can kneel in front of that idol. When God told you in the second commandment, he didn't say, hey, he said, don't even make one. You go back and read in Exodus and chapter 19 and 20 again, and read the Ten Commandments, and read it for yourself. You'll find out God said, don't even make one, much, much less bow down. He said, don't even make it. So it's hard to bow down to something you hadn't made. Now, I want to tell you Christians here, they worship this tree. We do too sometimes, don't we? What does Christmas really mean to you? Is Christmas to you what's around the tree, the presents, the possessions? Is that what Christmas is really about to you? Then you're worshiping just like the cult has always worshiped, and there's no difference. Now, you can have a Christmas tree, what I'm saying, and not worship like the cult. But you got to watch, you know, search your heart. What does Christmas really mean? Or are we just, you know, dupes at the bottom of the Triumph Pyramid, don't know any better, and are actually worshiping old Nimrod and Tammuz and what they got started? Now, I could talk to you about Nimrod and Tammuz for the next 3 hours, literally. Many people have taught over the past that this great whore that has slaughtered the saints is the Roman Catholic Church, and the beast is the Pope. Well, that's not completely true. There's a lot of truth to that. Most of you in here with the Catholic, from the Catholic Church, you probably don't know. You probably think Adolf Hitler was pretty bad since he killed 6 million Jews, and I would have to agree with you, he was pretty bad. But I want you to know that the greatest persecutor of all time that I know anything personally about was the Roman Catholic Church. During the Inquisition, which lasted between 150 and 200 years, the Roman Catholic Church murdered between 50 and 60 million people. I'm not talking about wars. I'm talking about murdered them. Many were Jews, and Jews in Spain, for example, in that area that would not accept baptism. See, the Catholic Church taught salvation through water baptism even back then. And they issued an edict that all Jews in Spain would have to get saved. How? By being water baptized. And every Jew that would not accept water baptism was either put to death or forced out of the country, and all their goods, their farms, their stores, their money, their bank accounts were taken over by the Roman Catholic Church. That's a simple matter of history. You can go to any library, anywhere in this town, or anywhere in the state, and read on it in volumes. All right? It's a matter of history. Now, please, you Catholics in here, understand something. You didn't do that. You didn't do it. It's not your fault. I told you that not to hurt your heart, but to help deliver you from the sin of pride, to thinking your denomination, as your people tell you, is the only voice of God on this planet, some voice of God. Not one pope to this day has ever repented for the heinous sins of that period. Oh, they'll say things like this. It's true the church made some mistakes in the past. Mistakes? Dear God, calling the massacre of 60 million peoples a mistake. They ought to be ashamed to even look in the mirror. Neither has in any way, form, or fashion that church ever apologized. Beloved, do you know it's hard to be forgiven of a sin until you repent? It really is. Now keep in mind what I hope you all understand what I just said. I don't hate Catholic people. I absolutely hate the organization that butchers people and then claims to be the voice of God. Now I want you Catholics to know something. Quite a few millions of those people that got butchered were Roman Catholics. They got turned into the Inquisition by other Catholics who wanted their possessions, and delivered them to the Inquisition on trumped-up charges. So let me tell you what I'm saying is, there's a bunch of Roman Catholics that don't like the Roman Catholic system either. They paid for it with their blood. Now, before this is all over, we'll understand that not too many organizations can claim that they have pure hands. Okay. But no. The Pope and the Catholic Church are not this whore. Many of the leaders in that organization are members. But then there's a lot of Baptists that's members of this whore. There's a lot of Pentecostals that are members of this whore. How many of you know you can be a Baptist and not be born again? How many of you know that you can be a Pentecostal and not be born again? Now, to briefly sum that up, let me just say this. When the rapture of the church occurs, the true church, those that have been born again, those that have accepted Jesus Christ as their Savior, everyone in the Catholic Church that's left on this planet, don't you understand, will be lost, Roman Catholic. The name, see, Catholic doesn't mean saved. See, how many words have a way of changing? Look, you go over to Lebanon today, and you run into people, and they are members of the Christian Democratic Party. Now, that doesn't mean you're a Christian. That means that's your political affiliation. And there's a big difference between being a Christian, a biblical Christian, and being a member of a political party that calls himself something, something, Christian. So understand that once the rapture occurs, every Baptist left in the Baptist church is lost. If he'd been saved, he'd been raptured. So what I'm saying is, beloveds, if I ever say something strong toward the Baptist church, I want you to understand that the Baptist church will be part of Mystery Babylon the Whore. And so will the Lutheran church, the Presbyterian church, the Episcopal church, and the Catholic church. All that didn't make the rapture, that are left in those churches, do you see what I'm getting at? They will easily have no trouble agreeing. I mean, after all, they already disagreed that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, else they would have been saved. Now, they may intellectually believe that, that it's a, that's a fact. That's right. But it's one thing to know something and believe something intellectually. It's another thing to commit your soul and life to that. So what I'm saying is, do you see, once all the real church has been taken out of planet Earth, what's left of the Baptist church, it won't be the Baptist church you loved anyway. I hope you didn't fall in love with those stained glass cathedrals. Surely you didn't love the pipe organ. And things like that. Surely the thing that you loved was the fellowship of Jesus Christ and the fellowship of the saints. Your fellow believers. Well, they're with you. Jesus is going to be with you.